Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, which had been hemorrhaging corporate members, still apparently has some draw. At its annual meeting taking place in San Diego, several GOP presidential hopefuls are making appearances. Among them are Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. The gathering will also draw protesters from groups like Common Cause, who see ALEC as an undemocratic institution that promotes corporate wish lists through state representatives. Now, ALEC has spawned its evil county-level cousin, the American City-County Exchange, or ACE, A-C-C-E. Just as ALEC gives corporations access to influence state policies, ACE is designed to implement corporate agendas at the hyper-local city and county level. Joining me today is Brendan Fisher, General Counsel with the Center for Media and Democracy, and he had spoken to us before about ALEC. Welcome back to the show, Brendan.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk about what the agenda is for ALEC this week in San Diego and why it is that this organization still has political clout, because as we talked last time, many corporations, sort of embarrassed by the attention that groups like yours have exposed ALEC to, have walked away for various reasons, because, of course, many parts of the right-wing agenda are quite embarrassing, but ALEC still continues.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, over the last year, more than a dozen corporations, including Google, Yelp, other companies, have dropped ALEC, in most cases citing ALEC's support for climate change denial. So there's a certain irony in ALEC going to drought-stricken California to convene and come up with new ways to deny climate change and undermine environmental regulations. So, but despite all of these companies leaving, ALEC still does have support from deep pockets like the Koch brothers, ExxonMobil, Peabody Energy, the tobacco industry. So ALEC is able to continue to raise funds from companies that may not be as susceptible to public pressure and consumer pressure. And the fact is, 68 out of 98 state legislative chambers in the United States are controlled by Republicans. And ALEC still does offer many companies a way to access and influence state legislators and, in turn, state legislatures and promote model legislation. So the agenda this year, a lot of it does have to do with environmental laws. ALEC has taken aim at the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's efforts to regulate coal-fired power plants. ALEC has come up with a variety of different ways to try and thwart the implementation of this clean power plan on the state level, doing everything from organizing state attorney generals to sue the federal government over the clean power plan, to legislation to thwart its implementation at the state level. ALEC is also going after rooftop solar and renewable portfolio standards. They've tried to come up with a variety of different bills to undermine these efforts to move America away from polluting industries and polluting utility companies and move us towards renewable energy. And they've had limited success, but they continue to try and push these policies because it benefits ALEC funders like Peabody Energy or the American Electric Power Trade Association.
Now, let's talk about the presidential candidates that are heading there. Is this as large a group as you've seen in the past in terms of governors and senators and also in previous lead-ups to presidential elections? Is this a smaller or a larger group?
This does seem to be a larger group. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, both Scott Walker and Mike Huckabee are going to be addressing the ALEC meeting. Ted Cruz just announced that he would be dropping out. He would not be attending ALEC for unknown reasons. I think Walker is particularly interesting because Walker is an alumni of ALEC. When Walker was a state legislator in Wisconsin in the late 90s and early 2000s, he was a member of ALEC, a relatively outspoken member of ALEC. He acknowledged that he got ideas like truth in sentencing, prison privatization directly from ALEC, and Walker's role in promoting those policies in Wisconsin has helped make the state one of the worst when it comes to locking up African-American men. Wisconsin has the worst record in the country when it comes to the proportion of African-American men that are behind bars. And Walker continues to push these policies, even as many of the other candidates in the GOP field have moved towards sentencing reform and prison reform. Walker also has boasted on the campaign trail about pushing voter ID in Wisconsin and stand your ground laws and tort reform and concealed carry. And all of these are ideas that came from ALEC, or they're policies that directly reflect ALEC model legislation. So it's a homecoming of sorts for Walker to return to ALEC and address the meeting.
The Guardian newspaper had an article yesterday where it referred to Scott Walker or asked the question, if Scott Walker were to win the Republican nomination, could he end up being the first ALEC president? Is that too much of, is that hyperbole, or is that, would that be accurate if in a very bizarre scenario we ended up with a President Scott Walker?
Yeah. Well, so he would be the first ALEC member to ever become president. Past presidents have addressed ALEC meetings. George W. Bush addressed ALEC meetings. Ronald Reagan lent his support to ALEC back in the early 80s. But Scott Walker would be the first politician to have developed his political career through ALEC, developed a national fundraising effort as a young legislator attending ALEC meetings. He was able to rub shoulders with representatives of Koch Industries and other global corporations and other major Republican donors. And he was able to tap into those networks, those funding networks, as he elevated his political career, as he ran for Milwaukee County Executive, as he ran for governor, and now as he's running for president. These relationships that Walker developed at ALEC are what is very likely helping propel his political career forward. And the way that he has indebted himself to those interests, or the way that he has developed relationships with those interests, is by showing that he's more than willing to promote legislation and promote policies that are going to benefit the people who bankroll his campaigns. So that's very concerning that some of these policies were built on paying back donors could be in the White House. I think the fact that Walker could be the first ALEC president is certainly cause for alarm.
I want to also, for those of our audience who aren't as familiar with the ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, I thought the description in The Guardian of exactly how it works was quite apt. It said, the network acts as a dating agency. It arranges hookups between state legislators, overwhelmingly Republican, and major U.S. corporations. It brings them together behind closed doors to dream up new business-friendly measures, these sort of pieces of model legislation that then we see popping up in state by state. Since, you know, if they can't get action at the federal level, they get them at the state level. Now they want to go after the city and county level. Let's talk about what I call Alex's evil twin at the local level, the American City County Exchange, or ACE. What is ACE? Is this a sort of a brand new venture to go even more local?
Yeah, I think that's right. So ALEC brings together state legislators and corporate interests, and what ACE does is bring together city and county elected officials and global corporate interests. And there's a certain irony to this, because for a long time, ALEC's response to grassroots efforts at the local level to raise the minimum wage or enact paid sick days or regulate fracking or regulate plastic bags has been to crush local control, to pass state-level preemption laws that prohibit any local unit of government from protecting the health or economic safety or economic welfare of their constituents. So there's an irony that ALEC is now trying to bring the fight directly to the local level and influence local elected officials to promote corporate-friendly policy. And one of the big initiatives is local right to work, passing right to anti-union right to work laws at the local level. After ACE's most recent meeting in December of last year in Washington, D.C., at least 12 Kentucky counties subsequently passed these local right to work measures. They've been tied up in court, but the legal defense for the counties has been funded by the U.S. Chamber, or the state affiliate of the U.S. Chamber, and Americans for Prosperity. And ACE is going to officially adopt a local right to work measure at this meeting, and I suspect and expect that these bills are going to continue to spread across cities and counties in the U.S.
Now, Brendan Alec has operated for many, many, many years, primarily because it was a sort of a secretive-ish organization. It didn't really get its, you know, before your organization, the Center for Media and Democracy, were able to get internal documents exposing its agenda, it operated within the shadows for the most part, and it was able to do so for years. If the agenda of ACE is being exposed right from the start, how important is it for local activists to see any whiff of connection between their local city council representatives or county supervisors, connection with ACE as anathema, to immediately treat that as, you know, as something poisonous that should taint their democratic representation? I mean, that could be a very important activist approach to take. If you're with ACE, you're not our representative and you shouldn't be running for office.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, I mean, ALEC and its new sister organization, ACE, they exist to facilitate corporate influence. They exist to sever that linkage between a elected official and the people that they represent. And that's particularly problematic on the local level, because with local government, for the most part, these elected officials are living in the communities that they serve. They're shopping at the same grocery stores, they're going to the same parks. So the idea that local elected officials need to be flown out to San Diego and handed corporate friendly legislation by global interests, that's very problematic, and it definitely undermines the representative democracy that local government is a pretty good example of. But they do try to operate in secret. ALEC tries to operate in secret. ACE tries to operate in secret. The meetings are closed to the press. They're closed to the public. Everything that ALEC does happens behind closed doors, and press are repeatedly booted from their meetings.
So any idea if there is any press infiltration at the San Diego ALEC meeting this week?
I think we'll see.
We'll find out. At
ALEC's most recent meeting, an NBC affiliate did try and go in, and they were kicked out by off-duty police officers that ALEC had hired. And I'm not sure if any local news media are trying to do the same thing at this month's meeting, but I certainly hope so.
I mean, it shouldn't be allowed that any meeting where our elected officials attend, the media should be banned. Unless, of course, they are counseling with their own sort of aides and their own campaign staff. But if they are at a conference and they are meeting with the corporate representatives, how is it even considered in any way ethical or legal that press should not be present?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, are they taking vacation days, these elected representatives, when they go there? Because if they aren't, if they're on the job, then that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so much about ALEC doesn't seem right. In many states, there's limits on the amount that a lobbyist can spend on a legislator. In Wisconsin, for example, a legislator can't even accept a cup of coffee from a lobbyist. But through ALEC, lobbyists and lobbying interests are able to give thousands of dollars to legislators in the forms of flights and hotel rooms and meals and expenses. And it's considered acceptable because ALEC is supposedly an educational organization. It's a charitable educational organization. And ALEC's pitch to the public is that it operates to make legislators better legislators, equipped with the tools that they need to better serve their constituents. And if that's really the case, then there shouldn't be any need for the secrecy. There shouldn't be any need for these discussions to happen behind closed doors, and for the press and the public to be forcibly shut out. But that's how ALEC operates. They've been successful for a long time because of the secrecy. So it's really important that we continue trying to shine a spotlight on the organization.
Which is why we're spending several minutes on our program today talking about it. Brendan, there is, of course, there are elections that will be taking place this year and next year. Next year in particular. And there is, of course, a very important need that corporations feel they have to be able to buy influence at the state level. And there is on the agenda discussion to look into what's called the dark money debate. Can you tell us a little bit about what they're worried about, what they think they're going to try to do?
Sure. Well, you know, for a long time, there was bipartisan agreement that election spending should be transparent. Even Republicans who oppose campaign finance reform said that people and corporations should be allowed to spend as much money as they want, as long as it's disclosed. And at this point, that's evolved to the point where even that is debatable. So ALEC has had a presentation at this meeting and in its last meeting trying to make the pitch to Republican state legislators that they should protect dark money, that they should protect the right of corporations and billionaires like the Koch brothers to pour as much money as they want into elections, and to have it all be entirely secret. This is going to be a topic of discussion at this meeting. It was a topic of discussion at the last meeting, and because I think there is still a sense among many state legislators across the political spectrum that secret money in elections is problematic. So ALEC is doing everything it can to try and change their minds, to try and suppress that feeling that secrecy is a bad thing. So the Center for Competitive Politics is going to have a presentation at this meeting, and none of this is really a surprise. I mean, the funders of ALEC are also some of the biggest dark money spenders in U.S. elections. Koch Industries, U.S. Chamber, other interests spend a lot of money on elections. They do it as secretly as possible.
Now, you mentioned the U.S. Chamber in San Diego, and of course, cities have their own local chambers of commerce. Isn't San Diego quite an appropriate city for ALEC to meet in? Hasn't the Chamber of Commerce in San Diego also been quite excited and involved in this meeting?
Yeah. So as I mentioned previously, ALEC has done a lot to try and suppress local control, at least when it threatens corporate profits. And San Diego has had a lot of action in the past year around raising the minimum wage and allowing workers to earn paid sick days. The city council passed a measure to do just that last year. And then global or national corporate interests, including corporate interests that are members of ALEC and fund ALEC, like the U.S. Chamber, like the American Hotel and Lodging Association, which is a trade association for the hotel industry, they initiated a referendum to try and overturn this minimum wage and paid sick days measure. And it was in large part funded by the Chamber and funded by the American Hotel and Lodging Association, and a representative of the American Hotel and Lodging Association actually boasted about this at ALEC's last meeting in December. He described how the AHLA worked with another ALEC member, the National Restaurant Association, to initiate a petition gathering drive where they use misleading tactics, and in some cases outright lies to gather petitions and overturn this effort to raise the wage and guarantee paid sick days, and they're going to continue to try and push this at this meeting. And interestingly, the Republican mayor of San Diego, Kevin Falconer, who endorsed this effort to crush the minimum wage increase effort and crush paid sick days, he's going to address the meeting. So it's fairly appropriate that ALEC is meeting in San Diego, given that backstory.
It would be wonderful to have heard or to be hearing the speech that Scott Walker is giving there this morning on Thursday. Perhaps if somebody has infiltrated the meeting, we might see that in the coming days. Finally, let's talk about the challenges that ALEC faces, both on the ground. I understand there are going to be protests that Common Cause is organizing, but also there's a challenge to ALEC's nonprofit status. And it's quite astounding that it even has a tax-exempt charity status. Can you tell us about those efforts?
Sure. So there are big protests planned around the ALEC meeting. More than 1,000 people marched, I believe, yesterday against ALEC, and including Dolores Huerta. She spoke out against ALEC and also against Walker specifically and his relationship with ALEC. And ALEC is a charity, and that's among everything else that's shocking about ALEC and the way that it operates. It's actually a 501c3 charity, which means that the thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands that companies like Koch Industries give to ALEC in order to access and influence state legislators, they get a tax write-off for this. Wow. Because ALEC is a charitable organization. And as a charity, ALEC is supposed to be engaged in a very minimal amount of lobbying. But it's very clear when you look at the facts that ALEC exists for lobbying. It exists both to do lobbying on its own and also to facilitate lobbying by its corporate funders. And Common Cause, along with the Center for Media and Democracy, have filed a series of complaints with the IRS alleging that ALEC is violating its charitable status by existing as a lobbying organization and existing to facilitate lobbying and operating as a charitable organization and giving corporations a tax write-off for their lobbying expenses. You know, the IRS has not stated publicly what the status of this investigation is, but because it is a whistleblower complaint, they are required to investigate. And we know that ALEC is taking this fairly seriously, because just within the past year or so, they formed a new spin-off organization organized under 501c4 of the tax code called the Jeffersonian Project. And as a 501c4, this new spin-off organization of ALEC can engage in unlimited lobbying. But I think that proves our point. It proves our point that ALEC had been engaged in lobbying for a long time and deceiving the IRS and deceiving taxpayers.
Brendan, thanks as always for joining us and sharing this information.
All right. Thank you for having me.
My guest, Brendan Fisher, is a general counsel with the Center for Media and Democracy. You can find out more about his work at alecexposed.org. This is Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar.